Listen and earn to the Profit Express with your host, Tim Healy. For over a decade, Tim has helped the Long Island business community create sales systems through sales system development, training, and coaching. Tim is also the president and owner of Healy Success Solutions. Get ready as we create big-time profits for your business today. Now, here's your host, Tim Healy.
Well, hello and welcome to the Profit Express. I'm Tim Healy, and I want to invite you to join me each week as we tackle the hottest stories, topics, and trends about today's entrepreneur right here on the Profit Express on 88.7 FM WRHU. And thank you for listening today. Now, for today's bottom line benefit, which will be on at 6:35, you can hear our resident financial expert, Phil Capel of Piermont Wealth Management, as he shares with you the latest financial news and market updates. And if you happen to be a 20-something, Phil will share with you a can't-miss financial checklist. So keep it right here on the Profit Express on WRHU-FM. So again, welcome aboard, everybody. Thanks for spending some time with me this evening. Now, I'm about to introduce you to the man who could have sold you your very own lava lamp or cat sack on QVC at 2 in the morning. Or maybe you still have night tremors from having seen your very first sheep castration or cow insemination on TV. Well, you can thank today's guest for that, and he is none other than Dirty Job star Mike Rowe. Now, he's on the Profit Express tonight to talk about what has become his life's journey with the Mike Rowe Works Foundation, whose purpose it is to reinvigorate the skilled trades. He's since written extensively about the country's relationships with work, the widening skills gap, offshore manufacturing, infrastructure decline, currency devaluation, and several other topics for which he has no actual credentials. So who better to have on this show, right? So how does the widening skills gap impact you? Well, the better question is, how doesn't it? If you have become addicted to modern civilized society with, oh, I don't know, things like indoor plumbing, paved roads, and electricity, you're going to be impacted. Because unfortunately, what we've been experiencing over the last few decades is our society and an army of guidance counselors who've drummed into our heads and the heads of our children that the only way to make a living is with a four-year degree. It's all been about working smarter, not harder. Unfortunately, it's caught up with us. How so? Well, if you are a recent or even not so recent college grad, you're probably one of 40 million Americans who have student debt. The average debt is $30,000 per student. The overall college debt for America is $1.2 trillion, folks, trillion with a T. And these recent college grads have borrowed money for an education for jobs that may not exist, and it is money they may not be able to pay back. Not good for the economy. And did you currently know, however, that there are currently about 3 million skilled trade jobs that are unfilled, and about 500,000 in manufacturing alone? Now, disconnect has been created in America with us and the people who do, no pun intended, the dirty jobs. The people who make, fix, weld, and clean our country. The behind-the-scenes people who keep our country running. But what happens when we have fewer and fewer of the people with the necessary skills to fix lights, weld steel, and inseminate cows? Well, my guest today, Mike Rowe, said it so well. If a TV host calls in sick, life goes on. But if our tradesmen don't report for work, things fall apart, literally. So how do we get reconnected to the tradesmen who make our lives livable, the very people who allow us to enjoy civilized society? Well, that's exactly why I'm having on Mike Rowe, host of CNN's Somebody's Got to Do It. And he's going to share the purpose behind his deeply insightful one-page book, Profoundly Disconnected, as well as his foundation, Mike Rowe Works. So it's a real pleasure to have on board the Profit Express, Mike Rowe. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Tim. Thanks for having me, and thanks for the intro. You make me sound smart.
Well, I know you're not qualified, but I know you are smart. That's for sure. So it's a great thrill to have you on. And I got to be honest, I share this with you, Mike. I have a brand new engineer tonight, Alyssa, and she picks up the phone and she's like, "Wait, is that Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs?" And I said, "Yeah." She's like, "Oh my god!" You should see how excited she got knowing it was you. So
she was she was very sweet and very competent. Tell her her future is nothing but bright.
Absolutely. And she's cracking up, so thank you. Now, Mike, let me get right into it. How much of an influence on what is now really your life's journey was your grandfather?
Well, he set the mark, you know, and you don't know as a kid what the mark is or who's setting anything, but it's only when you look back you start to realize, wow, that teacher, that friend, that person was something more than influential. Mm. My granddad was that guy, you know. He had a seventh grade education, but by the time he was 30, he was a master electrician, then a master plumber, a steam fitter, and a pipe fitter, architect, builder, welder. He just had that chip that some people have from birth that know how to take things apart and put them back together better than they found them. So I grew up in his shadow, literally next door to him. We had a little farm in Baltimore County, and he built the house I was built in without a blueprint. And he lived right next door. So the short answer is he was a big influence.
Do you fear that your grandfather is becoming a dying breed?
I don't fear it. I know it. I know that, you know, when I was a kid, guys who could do what Carl Noble could do were venerated. They were seen as heroic, essential. And they had their own notoriety around them, because we were more or less gobsmacked. We were impressed by that kind of ability. I think today those men and women still walk among us without question. They're just transparent, like the old song says. They're Mr. Cellophane. You know, we see right through them. For the same reason, frankly, that we're not blown away when the lights come on after we flick the switch,
right,
or you know, when the crap goes away after we flush the toilet. we just so thoroughly and completely expect the things around us to function that when they don't, we're not only put out, we're baffled, we're helpless, and whether it's an infrastructure that lets us down or you know a very minor problem in our own homes. You know, we can get religion pretty quick when we realize that we can't fix it.
And, right.
You know, but to answer your question, it's different. You know, today we don't get that kind of awareness until after the calamity. Back in those days, most people walked around understanding who kept the lights on.
You know, it's funny, as I hear the story of your grandfather, I like you, if I can speak for you on this, I'm not handy at all. My wife would certainly attest to it. And I hear people like your grandfather, and I almost can't comprehend that skill set, if you will, that mindset of being able to do what he did.
It was a combination of things, though, Tim. You know, the intellect and whatever God-given ability you might have, you can only take so much credit for. It's really all about execution. And I don't care whether you're a DJ or a TV host or an electrician, the level of work ethic, the amount of diligence, and the degree of care you bring to your work is ultimately the thing that'll define you. And look, this is old stuff. I've got nothing new to tell you or your audience. It's Horatio Alger. It's the old lessons. But every now and then, the old thing comes around and feels like something new. And connecting that level of work ethic with whatever level of skill you have, that's for sale today. That's what's lacking, in my view. And look, I'm with you. I didn't get the gene. It's recessive,
yes,
tragically.
Absolutely,
and,
yep.
You know, my granddad watched me wash out of every shop class there was, from carpentry to metal shop to auto shop. I wasn't a total disaster, but I just didn't get the gene, and it didn't come easy.
Right.
So, of all the great advice I've been lucky enough to get over the years, I've got to say somewhere near the top was him telling me, get yourself a different toolbox. You can still be a tradesman. Just get a different set of tools.
That was pretty amazing. That's, I mean, how he doesn't put the pressure on you knowing that you don't have it, but encouraging you to, you know what it is that you do have, what is in your toolbox, as it were.
He was intuitive and smart. And, you know, what he saw in me was the will to do something well. And he also saw me failing at the thing I was trying to do. So he was both, look, he was honest enough to discourage me from futility.
Right.
But wise enough not to discourage ambition. Mm. And honestly, look, I mean, not to get too analytical about it, but that to me is one of the huge things missing in the conversation today. I just can't get over. I still watch American Idol once in a while, you know, and those beginning auditions when people realize for the first time in their life that they can't sing. And it's not that they can't sing that's amazing. It's that they're realizing it at 20.
Right, in front.
Because no one ever sat them down and said, hey, maybe, you know, you get a different set of tools.
Right, right. It's everybody's afraid to tell the truth. Like, hey, I know I'm never going to play basketball professionally. I'm okay with that fact. I mean,
right.
You know?
But it doesn't mean you still can't play as good as you can play.
Exactly. Of which, speaking about singing, I know you have an opera background, which is even more amazing. And my engineer just said, what? She didn't even know that tidbit about Mike Rowe.
Look, people are surprised because most people who know me from a guy who crawled face down through a sewer for about 8 years.
Exactly.
And, you know, you don't associate Puccini or Verdi or Pagliacci with that image. But the truth is, if you're serious about an alternative toolbox, you know, you're going to find all sorts of things in there, from a pen and paper to maybe a voice lesson, maybe, you know, who knows? I threw everything but the kitchen sink in there. And for me, it was easier to impersonate an opera singer than it was a TV star. And that's what I did.
Well, isn't it true that you tried out for the Baltimore Opera because you thought it would be a good way to meet girls?
That was, in fact, a tertiary benefit, Tim, to be perfectly honest with you. It wasn't my primary motivator.
Okay.
I was really in much more of a mercenary mind frame then. I needed a job.
Okay.
And I wanted very badly to get into the Screen Actors Guild, which would allow me to audition for the kind of work I thought I wanted.
Okay.
But I couldn't get in the Screen Actors Guild until I did the work that would qualify me, but I couldn't do the necessary qualifying work unless I had my membership card for the Screen Actors Guild. So essentially I was caught in this catch-22, and you know, a lot of budding entrepreneurs run into something similar, I guess.
Yes.
But for me, the union that oversaw the opera was called the American Guild of Musical Artists, or AGMA. And if you can get your union card in the opera, you can pay your dues and basically buy your card into the Screen Actors Guild. That's why I auditioned for the opera. I had no interest in singing in the opera. I just was looking for an oblique way into the guild that would allow me to work in my chosen field. What happened is I wound up liking the music a lot more than I thought. And, yeah, to your point, there were about 40 girls dressed up like, you know, interesting French women.
It can't hurt.
It wasn't a terrible thing. No.
Exactly. Now, let's and again, folks, you're listening to The Prophet Express right here on 88.7 FM. And if you just tuned in, you got great time. You were talking with Mike Rowe, of course, of Dirty Jobs. But more importantly today, it's the Mike Rowe Works Foundation. And which leads me to my next question, Mike. The widening skills gap, and what is the mission behind your foundation?
In a nutshell, it's to pick up a whole lot of DNA from Dirty Jobs and connect some dots. At base, Dirty Jobs was a love letter to hard work and entrepreneurship. It's funny, a lot of people look at the show and see it as a straight-up homage to blue-collar work, and certainly that was a big part of it. But it was really a love letter to entrepreneurship. And it was, at base, a tap on the country's shoulder, really, to say, look, there are a lot of jobs out there that don't get the love. And I remember in 2008, when things were collapsing economically, headline news, every major newspaper talked about unemployment north of 10%.
Mm-hmm.
But on Dirty Jobs, everywhere I went, I saw unemployment. I saw help wanted signs. Everybody. Every boss I talked to, every small and large business in those industries were really desperate to find people that were willing to retool, retrain, maybe relocate. But but learn a skill that was actually in demand. So after Dirty Jobs finished, we did about 300, and I thought, you know, maybe it would be good to shine a light on some of these opportunities and maybe give something back to the industries that had allowed me to do so well and help out with respect to this ongoing message, this challenge of recruitment. And so the skills gap, which you mentioned in your open, obviously it's real.
Yeah.
People
yeah.
still argue about it, but I mean, even the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, you know, spells it out. There are 3 million jobs sitting there right now. And, you know, with respect to college, I agree with everything you said. $1.2 trillion is a lot of red ink to have on the books. It's
mm-hmm.
a lot of loans.
Mm-hmm.
MicroWorks is not anti-college at all. We're very much pro-education, but we're trying to instill in parents and guidance counselors and kids that college isn't the only place to get smart.
Right.
And of those jobs I mentioned currently available, only 20% of them require a four-year degree. The vast majority require a very specific type of training.
Right.
And that's the thing MicroWorks really focuses on. It's making a more persuasive case for alternative education, whatever that means, and it's shining a light on jobs that actually exist.
Now, I don't remember, I don't remember the exact date, but you spoke to the Senate.
How was,
when was that?
I said that was fun.
Right, your 5 minutes, right? How is, I mean, this is the message, and like and you're saying, like, hey, you know, you're not, you know, creating something new here. You're not reinventing the wheel. You're just bringing it to the forefront so people are aware of a reality that exists in the economy. How is your message being received, maybe politically or by corporate America?
It's tricky. Corporate America loves it because corporate America, fundamentally, you know, there's that constant tension between capital and labor. I mean,
right.
That's the bargain we make in a free society. But of course, that same tension right now is divided politically. So if you come down too heavily on the labor side, you'll be dismissed by the right. Come down too heavily on capitalism and corporate America, you're going to be dismissed by the left. Work ethic traditionally has been a thing that both sides can agree is good. So when I go to Congress and talk about the importance of reinvigorating the trades by challenging the country's work ethic, no one really comes out against it. But I'll tell you, there is an interesting narrative unfolding in the country right now, and it has to do with the way people react to laziness. And this does get political, and it does get tricky, and I don't really mean to go there, but work ethic, while no one is against it, no one really celebrates it. If you look at the kinds of scholarships that are available right now, today, in general, you can run right down the list. There's academic, there's athletic,
mm-hmm.
there's talent-based, and of course, there's need-based. Who's rewarding work ethic? Who is saying to the country at large, look, we still need to be impressed by attendance as much as we are by GPA, because the kid who shows up day after day after day, who is making an effort, that kid's in demand way more than he or she thinks.
yes.
And,
I mean, they don't know the skill they have, actually, right?
They really don't.
Right.
Because I'm telling you, again, it gets a little political, but I was just at a symposium and a policy seminar last week up in Mackinac in Michigan. All the elected officials were there, lobbyists were there, press was there, the governor was there. We had a big meeting. It was really interesting. And it's the same problem in Michigan as everywhere else. If you pull people aside who run big HR departments, big, you know, hiring managers, and really get them out of the office and off the record, it's extraordinary what you'll learn. when you ask them what the biggest impediment is to their ability to recruit, they'll tell you, normally in whispered tones, the biggest problem is finding people who can pee clean. Just pass the drug test. Huge
oh, wow.
problem. Second biggest problem, soft skills. They show up late. You don't look you in the eye. You don't, you're not tucking your shirt in. You're not pulling your pants up. You're not saying please or thanks. This is almost embarrassing to have to point out, but the reality is a lot of unemployed people work very, very hard and are highly motivated to change their circumstances. But a lot of others are simply unemployable at the moment because they haven't taken responsibility. They haven't put their own poop in a group. And that's a problem, you know.
That's a great T-shirt, by the way, Mike. I just see that. That's a great fundraising effort right there. Poop in a group.
Get your poop in a group. And I mean, look, that's kind of a long way to answer your question regarding Congress and bipartisanship and all those things. But the reality is, when you challenge people's work ethic, you do get some pushback from people who simply don't want to talk about that.
Right.
And that's as far as I go in that conversation, because there's really not much flattering to say after that. If you're not willing to make a case for yourself, my foundation can't help you.
Well said. I mean, well said. Now, you have a knack, at least recently that I'm aware of, for finding yourself in the midst of some hot topics. I find it enthralling. I find it really interesting and entertaining. You recently came to the defense, obviously, of the presidential contender, Governor Scott Walker. Now, he doesn't have a college degree. And you shared the story. And, of course, on the Prophet Express, I had to get you to share the story for the audition for QVC. And how QVC kind of stepped back about not confusing qualifications for competency,
right.
And how you sold the pencil.
I don't know how they do it today, but in 1989, there was no playbook for how to hire a home shopping salesman. There was just simply no way to do it because the industry was nascent, right? I mean, you could bring in very successful salespeople from all sorts of different genres, and they would crap the bed on TV. They simply couldn't function in a live television format, and the only way to find that out is to put them on the air.
Sure.
You could also hire, you know, a very accomplished reporter or newscaster or somebody who had worked in live TV, and they simply didn't know how to sell a thing.
Yeah,
and so they went through a lot of hiring protocol. They looked for academic achievement. They looked for distinguished people in the entertainment field. They looked for they tried their best to make sense of a person's qualifications in order to interview them and ultimately hire them. And what they learned, according to the guy who interviewed me, was that none of it worked. The only thing that ultimately worked was a two-step process. The first was get the candidate in a room, put him or her on camera, roll a pencil across the table, and say, talk about it until I ask you to stop and make me want it. That was my audition. And if you can talk about it for 8 minutes or more in a fairly convincing, persuasive way, you are hired for a three-month probationary period. And then you go on the air. I swear it's true. You go on the air every night from 3 to 6 a.m.
Oh, God.
For 3 months. And if you can withstand that crucible, and if you can get your head around the bottomless inventory of indescribable must-have items that fail to sell in prime time, which you practice on in the middle of the night, then you have a job.
Well, the cat sack was one of your famous ones.
And it's funny, I have no recollection of that at all. But a couple years ago, it popped up on YouTube, and now I don't know how many millions of people have looked at it.
Oh,
but
God.
Yeah, it's 3 a.m, and a guy comes out and hands me a bag, you know, lined with Mylar, designed to amuse your cat for $29.99. I don't know. I mean, what can you say?
You got to love capitalism. That's just fantastic. And folks, we're listening to the Prophet Express right here on 88.7 FM. And it's Mike Rowe, of course, from Dirty Jobs. And Somebody's Got to Do It on CNN. And, of course, it's the Mike Rowe Foundation talking about and championing the cause, if you will, of what is a very serious problem that's really impacting us now. How bad do you think it would get, Mike?
Well, if the skills gap doesn't close, if suddenly, you know, plumbers, electricians just call out sick, I'd give us 3 days before you've got a basic Armageddon situation. You know, I mean, you can see what happens when the lights go off for a couple of days. It ain't good.
Right.
You know, so look, a skilled workforce is, in my view, not only an essential part of a healthy economy, it's an essential part of national defense. And you have to look at it that way. And we get the workforce we deserve, in the sense that 300 million Americans get to decide what a good job is collectively. We get to decide how we feel about entrepreneurs. We get to decide how we feel about garbage men. We get to decide all those things. And that matters, because as a kid goes through his or her life, they're going to get a lot of influence from pop culture, from best-selling books, from popular TV shows, from their parents, their guidance counselors. You know, we get to determine the conversation about what a good job is. And if we don't steer it in the right direction, college debt, in my view, is going to increase.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of tuition is going to go through the roof.
Yep.
And fewer people are going to go after the jobs that actually exist.
The, you know, dating back to Mr. Dunbar, for those who don't know, was Mike Rowe's guidance counselor. And that's when the whole PR campaign that got us in the mess we are today started, right?
It's a big part of it.
Work smart, not hard.
Yeah, I mean, that's a platitude that's always struck me as some of the worst advice I ever got. If you Google work smart, not hard today, you'll see it written on lots of things. First time I saw it was at the bottom of a recruiting poster for college. And yeah, Dunbar was my high school guidance counselor, and he was making the case for a 4-year school, and I was arguing with him, not because I was against going to a university. I just didn't have any money, and I didn't know what I wanted to study. So a 2-year school seemed more affordable and more sensible to me. And yeah, that's when he pointed to the poster behind him that said "Work smart, not hard," and had a picture of two kids. One kid on the left with a college degree, just graduated, holding his degree, wearing a cap and gown.
Mm-hmm.
And to his right was an older worker, covered in grime or dirt or something worse, holding a wrench, looking down. And just very, you know, the message was crystal clear.
Oh,
if you don't have a degree, you're going to be miserable. And why work hard when you can go get smart? It's bad advice. There's no doubt about it.
I know you've probably been asked this question a bunch, but I was a fan. I loved the show, and I was always intrigued. You know, talking on the Profit Express about entrepreneurship, and I'm fascinated by how people make money. You know, from the business perspective, business owner, and not just workers. Of course, there's so many interesting ways out there. But out of all the dirty jobs, you said you were in. It was 300 shows in every single state across the country. Which story had the most to teach from your perspective that had the biggest impact on Mike Rowe?
It's a great question. Sadly, it's like asking, you know, what's your favorite color in the rainbow, or what's the most important thread in a quilt? you know, it's so many of them really overlapped
right.
and became part of the larger mosaic that it's hard to unravel. I mean, I really could talk to you for hours about the lessons learned from a pig farmer in Las Vegas named Bob Combs, but I'd find myself distracted halfway through by what I learned from the coal miners in Pennsylvania in a bituminous mine. And, of course, working on the Mackinac Bridge, 600 feet up in the air with the guys who change the light bulbs and paint the suspension cables. You know, lesson after lesson after lesson. You know, castrating sheep with your teeth is a job, and it's fraught with life lessons, believe me.
Oh.
You know, I mean, it's my education, and I ultimately did wind up getting a good one. You know, I went to a community college, and then I went to a 4-year university, and you know, I worked along the way, and it mm-hmm. took me a while to finish. But to be honest, I didn't really start to go to school until I was about 41, and that's when dirty jobs got picked up. And that's when I went back and really got reconnected to a lot of the things that, as a kid, were very, very obvious to me through my granddad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's probably a good place to end because that's where it started for me. I had become disconnected from all the obvious things that used to blow me away. You know, when I was 14 or 15, I remember being so impressed by where our food came from and where our energy came from, and so impressed by how things worked. There was something just mysterious and wonderful about the whole business of that. And, you know, as I found some measure of success and got my different toolbox and got working on it, I became very, very slowly unimpressed and eventually disconnected from all those things that used to matter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I were really to sum it all up for you, you know, I don't think I'm alone. I think a lot of Americans started out with wonder and appreciation for the kinds of jobs we're talking about. And over time and over a variety of successful occurrences, we've slowly become less gobsmacked. We're just not blown away the way we used to be. And there's your problem, you know.
Yeah.
We get the behavior we ultimately encourage. And I think that's a big reason why we don't have people lining up to take the jobs that are currently available.
Now, your grandfather passed before Dirty Jobs aired, correct?
He saw the first episode, which was good because the whole thing was dedicated to him.
Well, I know he's looking down. He's got to be proud of the effort, Mike.
My guess is he's shaking his head and probably saying, you know what? It beats hearing him sing opera.
Mike Rowe, thank you. Great story. I love the cause of Mike Rowe Works Foundation, of course. God, there's so much we could talk about, but I appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Well, look, if you don't mind a shameless plug,
let me
tell you, I'm running next door. I'm at my office in Santa Monica, and I'm running next door to shoot another episode of this internet show we call CRAP. It stands for Collectibles,
Rare,
and Precious. So, you know, I'm really kind of going back to my QVC days, and I'm taking all the crap out of my garage and all these weird collectibles I've accumulated from Dirty Jobs, and for the last 2 years I've been auctioning them off on eBay and putting the money into the Work Ethic Scholarship Fund. We've given away so far just over $3 million.
I love
it. So, you know, a lot of good things have happened to me, but one of the things that makes me laugh the hardest is sitting down today in 2015 and auctioning off a trinket, you know, that's been collecting dust in my garage for like $8,000. And people love to support the cause. And, I'm happy to do it.
And listen, before I let you go, is there any more fossilized polar bear poo available for auction?
That, I'm afraid, was truly a one of a kind. Jay Leno featured it, believe it or not, and I don't know what it sold for. But here's a crazy story. Last month, a woman said, look, if you send me some of your jeans, I'll make a quilt out of your pants, and you can auction it off. So I said, all right. I sent her my pants. She made a quilt. Somebody just paid $9,000 for it. And wrote me a nice note saying, you know, I really appreciate this opportunity to finally get in your pants.
Oh, and the hits keep coming. No, but you know what? It's a cause that we have to, like we said, you know, the radio host doesn't show up. Life goes on. But all of a sudden, electricity's not pumping through the building. Everything comes to a grinding halt.
Simple deal. Simple deal.
It is. Thank you so much for spending some time tonight. Great, great conversation, Mike.
I appreciate it. Give your audience my regards and tell that new engineer of yours she's going to go far.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mike.
You bet.
All right, bye.